another day. Another dollar makes you wonder where your money went.
Hi, folks. This is Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. One man's view of the changing world and the changing economic times and the things that we can all do to live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't. Folks, today is Monday, October 13th. You got me in a morning commute, so this show will be published today. I believe this is episode 72, if I have that right in my head, after a nice, relaxing weekend. And I am once again in my mobile studio, traveling right now at about 75 miles an hour, on my way to Frisco, Texas from Arlington. And today's show, we're going to kind of do a variety of things. I'm going to kind of do an off-the-cuff question and answer with just a few questions, though, as things that I've seen either in the forum or things that people have sent emails to me about recently, asking me my opinion or question or what I think people should do and different things like that. So every once in a while, I try to do a show like this that kind of breaks up the, 30-minute lecture on one item. I can only do so much of that. You guys will get tired of it if I don't change it up, so we're going to change it up today. Before we get into the questions that I'm going to be answering today, though, I want to talk to you just a little bit about some of the things that have been going on with the forum, with the site, and try to get more people active and involved in what we're doing. The first thing is, last week I did a show where I mentioned a new challenge I put out to everybody called the 5-Item Challenge. And folks, if you're strapped for cash, make it a 1-Item Challenge. But I'd like as many people as possible to participate in this. And you'll have to be a forum member because it's going to be done on the forum. But the 5-Item Challenge is pretty simple. What it involves is you go to grocery store, Costco, Sam's Club, Kroger, Publix, whatever place you buy food, and walk through the store, pick out some items that you've never tried before that have shelf life of at least 1 year without refrigeration. Okay? Go home, try it out, and then post the facts about it on our forum, whether you liked it or not, how many calories it got, how many servings there are per container, what the price per serving is. I have kind of a template already. All you really have to do is take one of the items that I did, cut the part where it's like, item survey, stuff like that, and then just paste it into your new post and change it. Try to do one post per item, and let's try to keep this thread clean. If there's a lot of chit-chat and stuff starts on this forum, like, oh, I tried that once and they're good, and we end up with a much longer series of threads than we should have, I'm going to start deleting them and have the moderators deleting them. These should be, if you have a question about something specific, go ahead and ask it. Let the person that posted the item follow up with it. But what we're trying to do here is we're trying to build a database of maybe a couple hundred different food items that people generally don't think of as survival food, where a person that's trying to figure out what can I add in my pantry can go through that list and see all those different items there, give people's opinions about it, consider whether somebody else's kids liked it or not, or whether somebody's wife liked it or not, or whether just they liked it, where to get it, how to use it in different situations, and how to combine it with other foods. And yes, if you want to publish like recipes, like I took this and I made it part of this recipe, do that, okay? But let's just, not a lot of, off-topic discussion in this thread at all, because we're not going to let them in there. Simply because I want a new person that shows up at the site, 6 months from now, to be able to use that thread as a shopping list. And it'll be a lot easier if we keep it concise and to the point of the thread. I also haven't stickied that thread yet. I'll do that today, probably before I publish the show, so it'll stay up on the top. So this should become a great resource for people. So I'd like you to participate in it. And again, if you can't do 5 items a week, do 1. Or do 2, or do 3, do whatever. Don't think if you can't do 5, or you don't have time to do. Maybe even you're trying your own 5, but you only have time to post 1 or 2. That's good. We'll get to. If everybody does a little bit, we'll really get a big database built on this discussion. And I think it's important because so many people, when they think about survival, they think 25-pound bag of pinto beans, 50-pound bag of rice, and a couple cases of MREs, and that can get really old really fast. And I've spoke on that before. And beans and rice can be components of a lot of different meals to give them variety. But what it's a good idea is to realize that a lot of the survival food, if you want to call it that, that you can buy to follow the credo of eat what you store and store what you eat, is available right down at the local shopping market. And this thread should help everybody find that. The other thing I wanted to point out is we've added some new boards to the forum lately, and a couple of them you actually have to have made at least 10 posts before you can even see them. We have a swap meet exchange meeting board where you can post items that you want to sell or trade, and you can set up meetings with other people. You have to have given at least 10 posts on the forum and be called a prepper and the little title thing before you can access those boards, that board. There's a links and resources board where you can post a link to, you know, either your site or any site that you think is a good site for people to get information or items or products from. That also requires 10 posts. And there's a great deals board, which is like, I just found a really great deal on ammo at Cheaper Than Dirt, or I just found a really great deal on training at this place or what have you. That also requires 10 items or 10 posts before you'll even be able to see or access that board. Now, the reason we did that is these boards that allow you to self-promote a little bit or promote commercial deals and stuff like that or sell stuff have the most potential for abuse. So a lot of times in forums what people do is they see those boards and they go, oh great, I can use that to promote myself. And they join, they throw up three or four promotional, self-promotional posts. They contribute nothing to the community. And then they leave. And I just hope that that works out for them. And maybe they come back once a month and redo a post. And that's all they use it for. Frankly, we don't want community members like that in our forum. I've always believed that you should be able to have a signature. If you own a business, it mentions your business and a link to your website. If you're in a community and you're an active participating member and you're doing something special and you want to let people know about it, I've tried to put enough boards in there that something should fit just about anything. There's even an off-topic board. Right. So if you want to let people know what you do, I'm okay with that. I also think, though, that that's for people that are good, honest members of the community. We may be adding some other special boards in the future that will require a lot more posting to gain access to, probably at least 100 posts, which may sound like a lot, but five a day for 20 days, and you've got 100 posts. We've already got a guy on the forum with over 300 posts, believe it or not, which I thank that gentleman for his contribution. And the reason that posts are important is, assuming that they're all not cool or thanks or great, and that's all the posts are, if you're writing anything with opinion, suggestions, conjecture, anything like that, you're contributing to the knowledge base. And that's really what a forum is supposed to be. It's supposed to be collective intelligence. In other words, I can't tell you everything you want to know about survival because I don't know everything I want to know about survival. You know, I'm not a super expert in any of this stuff. I just have a general knowledge and kind of a flair for delivery and a willingness to do research the things that I don't know. That's how this show's been put together. So, but when you get a forum together, what you get are all these people that go, well, you know, I tried that already, and it sucked, and I lost a lot of money, and maybe you shouldn't do it. And then, you know, those two people share that ideal. Now, that's no different than your buddy saying, hey, man, I bought that part for my car, and I bought the off-market brand, and a lot of times the off-market stuff's fine, but with that particular O2 sensor, don't do it. And then that knowledge is only between two people. When it's done in a public forum, or even a semi-private forum, which is really more of what we have, and there's 200 or 300 members, and they all read that thread, that intelligence has now been shared with all of them. And if you ever hear people talk about Web 2.0 and user-generated content, that's really what it's all about, forming collective opinions and collective intelligence. So that's what a forum's about. Let's try to make it about that. Another thing I want to point out for some of you guys that want to turn every discussion of a political person into a discussion of some scandal around them, no matter who it is. I don't care, Democrat, Republican, Independent, doesn't matter. Unless that person is the topic of that discussion, let's leave that stuff out. If you want to discuss that, and you make your choice, whether it's a genuine political discussion or it's kind of a conspiracy discussion, there's two boards, one for each of those. Put it there, make it its own topic, and if somebody wants to discuss it with you, that's fine. But when somebody that has a topic going about, let's say Barack Obama, let's not turn it into a discussion about Sarah Palin. Other than if she's mentioned, that's fine. But let's not start going through like, well, Joe, this is what Troopergate's all about. No. If you want to discuss that, make a post about it and see if anybody wants to discuss it with you. Do not hijack threads. That's just a basic forum etiquette thing. Let's try to keep the discussion on topic. If it makes you think of a new topic, that's excellent. Just go make a new, brand new post, all right, with the proper title that's about what you want to discuss, and make sure it's in the proper board. That's it. And you can discuss just about anything you want. I'm pretty easy on stuff like that. So let's get this forum really kicked up and running. So with that said, I want to make one more announcement, and then I'm going to go into some questions here, and that is that we did have a winner of the listener appreciation contest I announced last week. His name was Robert Cochran, and I emailed Robert Cochran. I've announced the second time I'm putting his name on the show. I will email him again today. If by close of business today I do not hear back from Robert, tomorrow then I will announce a runner-up who will become the new winner. And that means that somebody else will win the $150 worth of silver, or $149, whatever you want to call it, or the iPod, your choice. So you still have a chance to win that if you'd already entered. There's a second round of the Listener Appreciation Contest, so if you're not familiar with it, go by thesurvivalpodcast.com, enter the contest, because round two is coming up soon, and all you need to do to be in that competition is agreeing on your honor to tell other people about our show. That's it. And please, if you're not going to tell other people about our show, don't enter. It's a pretty easy thing for a man to stand on his honor. It's also a pretty easy thing for it to be abused. So please don't abuse that, and let's stick to the spirit of it. And some of you guys are really going out of your way to share my show, and I surely appreciate that. Thank you for it. I've seen this question come up a couple times now. It came up last week, again, in a comment on the blog. And it was basically just, how do I know whether do I bug out or do I bug in? Do I get out of Dodge or do I stay put? And, you know, I could probably do a whole show on this, but I would probably be pushing a lot of filler into it. So let's see if I can just answer this concisely in 5 minutes or less. The first answer to that question is you do whichever one of them gives you the greatest odds of survival. Just like you would in any other decision. You're standing on a road and a car's coming at you. Do you stay put? No, obviously not. So if the car's going to hit you, you move. Which way you move is a decision you have to make at this point. Will there be other cars in the other lane? Do you have time to check the other lane before you move, or are you better off jumping off to the shoulder on the side that you're on? All right? That's how you have to think when you're making this decision. The second point I have to bring up is there are times when you absolutely do bug out. Even if you're unprepared, you don't know where to go, you don't know what to do, and in 99% of other situations, you'd be better off staying put just because you're so unprepared. And these would include things like, there's a credible threat that an atomic bomb is about to be set off in a large city near your small town or in the city you live in, and it's close enough that you would either get irradiated or blown up. All right? Why do you leave? Because your odds of surviving increase, even if you're completely incompetent as a survivalist, even if you barely have any money, the very act of driving 50 miles away increases the odds you'll survive if you believe the threat is credible. A major weather event like a hurricane is coming, and the National Weather Service tells you if you're in the path of this hurricane, this close to the shore, you will die. All right? Again, even if you're ill-prepared, the very act that you leave will increase your chance of survival. The thing both of those scenarios have in common is when you go somewhere else, it will be better there. All right? We'll say that again. If you go somewhere else, it will be better there. Better for your survival. Not maybe more comfortable. Of course, it will be more comfortable as soon as the event occurs. But you're better off in a different place. If the panic is national, widespread panic has set in. People are looting city streets from Jacksonville, Florida, to Seattle, Washington, to Los Angeles, California, to Portland, Maine. That kind of widespread panic. Unless you have a place prepared to go, or a place with relatives that is out in the sticks somewhere, traveling will probably increase your odds of being attacked. So even in that scenario, for many people, the best situation would be to stay put. If you think about it, if you do prep, if you store food, if you keep some cash on hand, if you do all the things that we talk about on the show that you should be doing every day, all your gear, all your stuff, and all your comforts are in your house. There's no way you're ever going to evac with everything you want to take with you. It might be interesting someday on a weekend and just do a drill. Just load everything up like you were bugging out. Everything you would want to take if you were going for 3 weeks or more. And see how many things don't fit, don't work. You know, that's kind of a drill that we used to do in the Army, going on alert. Load up the vehicles, load up the equipment, load up everything. Sometimes we even put them on aircraft. The aircraft sometimes even took off and flew in a great big circle and brought them back just to see how we would perform. All right? You may want to run that drill for yourself. It may be eye-opening for you to do that. All right? So, in many instances, you're better off staying put. However, if you did have widespread panic and you kind of caught the idea that it was happening early and you have a properly prepared retreat, in my instance, I have a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom home on 5 acres of land at the end of a dirt road in the middle of rural Arkansas. All right? If we ever have that kind of a breakdown, which I think is not the most likely scenario, folks. That's a nationwide or at least statewide scenario for me that's going to drive me to do that. But if it does occur, since I have a place to go, I am prepared, I do know where I'm going, I do know how I'm going to get there, my other family members know how I'm going to get there, I would probably bug out. If you took that place away from me, and it was going to be packing up a tent and trying to live in the woods that, you know, maybe a million other people are trying to do at the same time, and all of them incompetent, I'd probably stay put. All right? I'm far enough away from the major cities that unless we're talking Armageddon, people will most likely leave us alone, and we do have defensive capabilities. All right? So there is no answer that's as simple as scenario A, bug out, scenario B, bug in, because it all has to do with how prepared you are, where you would go, how you would get there, what level the threat's at, your personal decision whether or not to go. Those are the things that you personally have to think about. So I've seen a lot of forum threads on survival forums and even just gun forums that have a survival board that are, you know, exactly this question. And you'll see 100 answers from 100 people. And a lot of times you'll read them and go, 90 of those 100 answers are completely different from each other. And they're all basically right. Because the individual has stated, I would bug out because I have this place to go. I would stay put because I don't. And I think I'm better off. Now the other side of this is, if you're already in a place, like let's say I had already moved to Arkansas, I already done my planned bug out, which I'll talk about in a second. I already did my planned bug out, and I'm there. Well, I don't care what happens. I'm staying put. Until somebody comes to try to burn my house down, I'm probably in one of the best places I could be. So if you live in a rural community, very rural, out in the sticks, you have your home turned into a homestead, it's providing for you, obviously, unless there's a direct threat in your area, you're better off staying put. That's why people have bug out locations. So I hear people that say, well, I've got 20 acres of land in rural Missouri, and I'm trying to figure out where I'd bug out to. Man, can I come stay with you? If I have to bug out, that's what I got to say. Are you crazy? All right, you've got a 20-acre farm out in the sticks in rural Missouri. Do you know how many people would kill to have that if we get the shit hits the fan scenario? Really? So if you already have something like that, concentrate on turning it into something that produces for you. Maybe think a little bit about defense, but you know these fantasies, like in Patriots: The Coming Collapse, where they have these patrols running around on their perimeters and LPOPs, listening posts, observation posts, and setting up ambushes when somebody comes to your house. I mean, come on. Come on. Could society ever go there? Sure it could. Is it likely? It's not real likely. It just isn't. All right? Those make great stories. They're great for some of our, you know, more fringe people to really fantasize about. But what you're really trying to prepare for here is I can't go to the grocery store, or the grocery store is empty, or martial laws declare we can't travel, or there's a pandemic flu and we can't travel. Okay? Or there's a major food shortage, and there's food, but it's gone up in price sixfold. And until any kind of food shortage like that's going to be short-term in duration. There's a market, global economy, that unless we have some kind of disaster that wipes out crops permanently, all right, in which case we've got a really big problem. But in most situations, something would skyrocket food prices, would correct itself at 6 to 12 months. So if you had 6 to 12 months worth of food, you'd be in good shape. If you had 6 months worth of food, and during 12 months you used it, and you bought half, and you brought the price down, you would be able to get through that time. So these are the things that we're really preparing for. We always have to stay cognizant of that when we're making any decision, especially do I stay or do I go, which is really what you're talking about when you're about bugging out. And then the next thing I want to move on to is something a little bit different. It's not really a direct question. It's the constant what-ifs by people. Well, what if this happens? What if that happens? What if this, you know, my uncle used to have a saying, folks, and this may offend some of you, but it was point cut and dry, and it made an impression on me, and it made me realize that what I did mattered, and what might happen mattered a hell of a lot less. And that was, if your aunt had balls, she'd be your uncle. So don't worry about what if this, what if that. Worry about doing the things that make sense, you know. Well, what if I store all my food and then somebody steals it anyway? Well, it's a risk. Right? What if somebody hacks into your bank account and steals all your money anyway? I mean, if you're real worried about that, I have a solution for you. Send me a check for the full amount of money in your account, and I'll take it off your hands so you don't have to worry about that anymore. So really, when you're talking about what if this and what if that, ask yourself, is it a reasonable and plausible scenario? What can you do to mitigate it, to make it less likely to occur, if anything? And what are the consequences if it does happen? And a lot of times, that right there will just kind of lend a kibosh on it, because you're either going to realize there's not really a lot I can do to mitigate this, so I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to do something else to back it up, all right? Or there is something I can do, and I'm also going to do something. So, like, let's say, well, what if somebody steals all my stored food? What if the government comes in and seizes it because there's a shortage everywhere, and they know I have food, so they come and take mine? Well, what you could do is you could have your food broken up into 4 or 5 caches, all right? And then when they come to take your food, they'll only get some of it, right? You could do the same thing with your weaponry, right? Okay? You could also make sure that your area is well defended. You could also keep your beak shut and not tell a lot of people that you have a lot of food. Alright? I kind of can't do that on this show. If I'm going to do this show, I have to admit that I'm a survivalist and I store food and stuff like that. But a lot of you guys, I mean, you know, just keep your mouth shut. Don't worry about the fact that you even tell anybody on a forum on the internet. Who cares? There's millions of survivalist forums. Everybody thinks we're crazy. But don't tell your neighbor, hey man, I got a 6 months worth of MRE stacked in my closet. First, he's going to think you're off. And he's probably not going to want to talk to you unless he's a survivalist too. And second, as soon as something goes wrong, he's going to be at your house going, come on man, you got food. And then he's going to run his mouth, right, because you probably would give him some, to his buddy. And next thing you know, you're going to have a line of people waiting to eat your food at your house, right? So, you know, the what if to that is keep your yap shut, cache your food in multiple places, because even just if your house catches on fire or something, it's good to have your food spread out. You might not lose it all. Never put all your money in one place. Never put all your items and goods in one place, all right? You know, so that's just one. But in any of these scenarios, what if this? What if that? I remember I used to teach self-defense in the Army, and I'd say, okay, this is a defense against when somebody attacks you this way. Well, what if they do this? What if they do? Learn this technique. Learn this technique and master it, and then we'll learn another technique, and then we'll learn another technique. And you'll never be 100% prepared, but don't let that get in your way of becoming somewhat prepared. All right? So that's kind of my survival morality lesson for you. What if is never an excuse to do nothing. And it's irresponsible behavior to allow what if to keep you from doing the things that will protect you and your family if times get really tough. All right? So that kind of covers that one. Another one I've been getting a lot lately is, do I think now's a good time to buy some stocks? All I can tell you is I'm not doing it. And it might be a good time, and I might be missing a hell of an opportunity right now, but I just don't think we're going to come out of this thing fast. I think there's plenty of time to cherry-pick companies that, you know, if you're going to talk about buying stocks right now, I would not go into index funds. Again, not a financial advisor, but I would be looking for companies who have consistently posted a profit. I'd be looking for companies that have not played in the paper asset business at all, okay? I would be looking for companies that produce items that people are still going to buy, even if times get tough. And I would be looking for companies that have consistently paid a good dividend against their share. And if they were paying, let's say their stock was at $65, they were profitable last quarter, their projections are they're going to be profitable this quarter, they were paying, let's say, a 40-cent dividend, and they'll probably still pay a 40-cent dividend, and their stock price is down around $12. There are some companies out there like that. Sorry, folks, I flinched there. I had a guy trying to come in my lane. Anyway, and there are some stocks out there like that. I'm not going to name names because I can't give recommendations because it's not my place. There are some stuff out there that fits that portfolio. If I were going to be buying anything, those are the types of things I would be buying right now. I've been saying the whole world's on sale. I'm not talking about stocks right now. And there are some stocks on sale. That's a Dave Ramsey philosophy. What I'm talking about being on sale is I would like another pickup truck, a reserve, backup, old pickup truck, something I can work on that will always be there, that can be a workhorse around my place up in Arkansas. Something I might even put a plow blade, even though we don't have snow up there, I could use it for different things around the place. Maybe weld a big old giant iron bumper on it, use it to push some trees over as I'm clearing things out instead of paying a guy with a dozer to do it. All right? So that was something I planned to buy when we relocate. I may this winter, you know, January, February, when people are hurting for money, and I think they're going to be, start looking for something like that on sale. I have a nice little John boat. I even posted a video of it on the forum that I kind of kitted up. It's not really what I want in a good lake boat, though. And when I moved to Arkansas, I'm only 8 miles away from one of the biggest lakes in the southern United States. A gorgeous lake with every kind of game fish on it, and I want to spend a lot of time on there. So I may look for a boat in the winter this year. I'll probably have to make a choice, one or the other, not both, but that's the type of thing I'm thinking is going on sale. If I didn't already own my rural piece of property, I would be looking hard at property right now, and I may even look hard at property this winter as well, and see if there's something that represents a good buy, maybe an upgrade in survival retreat, or maybe I could find some land around Hot Springs that I could use for other purposes I might not even build on, that would be close to where I'm at. So those are the types of things that are going to go on sale. I think food's going to go up in price. I think a lot of day-to-day needs will go up in price because people will start taking higher margins to try to put up good numbers so they look good for the market to attract investors. And the people that will be able to do that will be the ones that sell stuff you got to buy anyway. All right, so these are hard consumer goods. This is food, folks. Food's going to go up. Food's going to have higher margins. More investors are going to be attracted to it. All right, and anything else you need, you look around your house and say, what do I really need here? Every time you spend a dollar that you can't cut from your budget, think about what it is. It's probably a good investment going forward in the next 3 or 4 years. All right, can't say that it is, but it probably is. Let me move to another question that's kind of related to this one. If everything is so screwed up, the market's tumbling, you know, we have all this stress and there's shortages everywhere, and why the hell is gas coming down like it is? It's dropped almost a buck, you know, over its high this year. In some cases, it might even be more than that. Why? Well, folks, this is something I said to watch out for. And to be fair, it's something Glenn Beck, who's a much more popular talk host than I am, said to watch out for. When you see the price of gas coming down, and there are reasons for it to stay where it is or to go up, you know the economies are getting bad. Gas is driven largely by supply and demand. The more demand, the higher the price. Well, what's happened, in spite of, you know, some oil refineries being shut down, some fields have actually hit peak. There's the Cantrell oil field in Mexico has hit peak and is in decline. That's the largest oil reserve, and the sixth largest oil producing nation in the world has had its largest reserve hit peak and begin declining. And it's declined by the same amount of oil produced by all the rigs off the coast of Texas and Louisiana. That's its decline. And yet we see oil prices coming way down. We have analysts saying oil's going to hit $60 a barrel or less in 2009. So it's not just down now. They're projecting to continue to decline. What that means is that businesses around the world are cutting back operations. Less stuff is being shipped. Right? People are driving less. The global recession is reducing the demand on gasoline, which is putting the price down. What does this mean for us? For us, it's good as an individual. It's a bad indicator of the economic whole of the globe. Absolutely terrible. That's happening right now for the world. It means that the whole economy of the globe is in recession and possibly heading into a global depression worldwide. The good news is the gas you do have to buy is going to cost you less, and it's going to continue to drop in price. And I never thought we'd see the south side of $3, and we already do. We may see it slide south of $2.60, $2.50 in a relatively short term. And I think it's going to stay there a while. Again, I'm not an analyst, right? All I can do is look at all the things that are going on and make my own prediction, and that's just what I see. And one thing I can tell you, when global recovery hits, we will see new heights to gasoline. Now, is that 4 years? Is it 2 years? Is it 8 years? I don't know. But when we truly have a global economic recovery in the world, even with all the investment that's going to go into alternative fuels and alternative energy and all the things like that, even if we really make a big dent in the works, when everything ramps back up and China and India's economies begin to roar again, a lot of their infrastructure is going to still be built around fossil fuels. And folks, the more the United States does to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels, the more that countries like India and China will use, you know, existing technologies to fuel their economies. So their demand will continue to grow even during a recession, and when it goes away, you'll see a massive upswing there, and that may be the catalyst that triggers global peak oil. It may not. I am not a big guy on putting like hard dates on stuff like that, because everybody that does ends up looking like an idiot when it doesn't happen. And what they're hoping is they get the big hit someday that they go, well, I think this is going to happen here, and if it happens to, then they look like a genius. You know, I don't try to play that game. I don't know if it will, but it certainly could, because you're talking about just in China and India over 2 billion people. 2 billion people with massive numbers moving into the cities, out of the rural lands, coming into the middle class, and buying everything from mopeds to big passenger cars. All right, so that's still out there. That's not going to go away. Just that right now, since we have a global economic downturn, that's dropping the price of gas prices. So that's why that's occurring. Okay, the last question that I've had quite a bit of discussion going on about among members through emails on the forum and the blog, everything, is where do I go? Where do I, when it comes to looking for land, come looking for a retreat, what part of the country is best? And, you know, I know there's some opinion out there that there's absolutely nothing east of the Mississippi that's remote. And my question is, how remote do you really need to be? Right? If you ask me, like, what's your ideal place to live, I'll be honest, it would be the wilderness in Montana, Wyoming, or Idaho. That's where I would go. And if you have the freedom and the ability financially and everything else to do that, it may be a good place to go. The one downside there is they do have rather short growing seasons, so you can do some things to extend those, but that's one of the downsides. The upside is that in those areas, you have a community of people that are basically survivalists and don't even know it. These guys prepare anyway. That's just what they do up there. So you're surrounded by good people. There's plenty of hunting and fishing. There's plenty of open land. And it's a place where people aren't, these wandering hordes, should they ever occur, they're really not likely to go there. I mean, people are right about that. So that's one real upside for them. But the other point I want to make is there are remote areas just about anywhere you go. I mean, if you look at the swamps of North Florida and South Georgia, if you could find it, if you like that kind of a, you know, having an airboat to get to the road, you could be pretty damn remote there. And there's plenty to eat there, and you're not going to have wandering hordes, because if they try to wander their hordes into that, they're going to be up to their neck in literally quicksand. So, you know, you wouldn't think of Florida or Georgia as a place with a lot of remote area, but there's quite a bit there. North Georgia Mountains, up by the South Carolina border, Tennessee area, that part of Georgia, there's some pretty remote stuff there. It's kind of pricey, but it's remote. Maine is huge, and there's parts of Maine that you can drive for several miles and never see pavement and still find land up there. Again, it's kind of expensive and pricey, but if you have the means, it's not a bad place. My personal opinion is the best deal on rural land available today is in southern Missouri and central to northern Arkansas, and that's why I picked the area myself, because the land there is still relatively inexpensive. You can be very remote, and you have the other side about that area is you have a very long growing season, and with a little bit of greenhouse work and all, you can grow crops year round, and even some stuff you can keep in the ground year round just by having some stuff to put over them at night when it really freezes. Some of the greens and stuff you can grow right through the winter in the ground in parts of Arkansas anyway, and you still get the seasonal change, which just makes it a nice place to live. So I think you can pretty much find what you're looking for in most areas of the country. There are certain that I just wouldn't recommend because the taxes are insane. New York has some amazing places, but you're really going to have to search hard to find something that's not going to have a tax burden that might be equal to your entire house payment in Arkansas. So you really have to look at the taxes as well, because your goal should be to not only buy a place, but eventually to pay it off and live as debt-free as possible in your retreat. Now, if your taxes are $14,000, $100,000 a year, and that's not a stretch in places like New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island. I mean, those are places I would just stay out of. And again, upstate rural New York, if you can find a place with good taxes, there's some beautiful places up there, and you might find some. But that northeast New England area, the taxes are insane. Florida taxes are getting really high, even in kind of the more remote areas. So you have to look at the total package, not just being remote, but being remote, total cost of living, and total cost of ownership. So those are kind of my rules to look at. And again, I really recommend United Country is a place to kind of get just a feel for what's available in rural land and what going prices are. But they don't have a lot of listings. They have relatively low numbers of listings. So when you find an area that seems to have a lot of really good property available, you know, get that city, go over to Realtor.com at the multiple listing services, and start investigating that area. Maybe even call a real estate agent in that city and say, hey, I'm considering a second home or kind of a vacation retreat or whatever you want to call it. I wouldn't call it a survival retreat. They don't need to know that. And just say, can I get maybe some more listings from you? Can you keep me apprised of some specifics? Here's what I'm looking for. I want at least X number of acres. I need at least X number of square feet. I'm looking for flat land. I'm looking for, mountainous land, whatever you're looking for. And let them know. And there's going to be some pretty hungry agents out there. So if you get one that doesn't seem like they want to work, go to the yellowpages.com and just pick another one in the same town. You call two or three, you'll find one that's going to get hungry, even if you're a long shot, because they need to make a deal, because those guys only get paid when they sell. So I think it can be anywhere, but you need to think about that combination. One being remote. You do not want to live in town. You do not want to live in a suburb. You do not want to be able to spit out your window and hit your neighbor's house in an ideal environment, right? And like the suburbs where I live, I literally could do that almost on both sides. Even though I have a big backyard, the houses are stacked on top of each other. Up in Arkansas, it's a long walk to the closest neighbor, right? We're talking several hundred yards to get actually from my door to their door. So that's really more ideal. And just be specific with what you want when you talk to a real estate agent. And let them know, hey, man, I'm really looking for the right place. I'm set up. I'm ready to go. But I'm not going to jump until I see it. I'd just like you to keep me apprised. If you bring something to my attention and it fits, I'm going to deal with you. I'm not going to go around you or anything as long as I know I've got a good set of boots on the ground there. And you'll find one or two that'll work with you that way. And, maybe they'll find something for you. And if they don't work that way, or they don't specialize in that kind of land, odds are they have the ability to refer you to somebody maybe a little north or south or east or west of them that does. So that's kind of my answer to that question. I think that'll kind of wrap up today's show. Again, folks, please come by the forum. Please get engaged in the forum. Talk to other members. You're going to find out we have a great, growing, thriving community here of people that really want to help each other. Take the 5-item challenge, even if you have to scale it down to 3 items or 2 or 1. Go out every week and buy a couple things that are brand new, you've never tried before, that store well. Try them out. Post your results on the forum. Let people know whether you liked it or not, what you thought of it. Let's build that database. That'll be good. Make sure you comment on this episode and other episodes. That's just at the blog. We have 2 ways that you can participate in the discussion. One is every time I post a show, it goes along with a post on my blog, and that's just the comments that are specific to that this show. And then the forum, you can say whatever you like, and as long as you're in the appropriate forum and you're respectful of other people. Again, remember, listener appreciation contest. I got a feeling, folks, I told you this would happen, that I've got a bad email from this guy, or he doesn't check his email or whatever. And Robert, if you're listening, buddy, you got till the end of today to claim your prize. So tune in tomorrow. I may be handing out the iPod or the silver to another person, depending on what they want to choose. And again, this has been Jack Spirko with the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. You can scream and you can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.